Welcome, guys, to episode 7 of the Produce Common Sense podcast. I'm very fortunate to have Paul Manfrey with me, who is a true veteran of the industry. And his point of view on a few things are what I think are the exact opposite of mine. So this could be an interesting conversation to have him here and hear his point of view. What I'm titling and the thought of the name for this episode is, will U.S. produce farmers be in business as we operate today in 10 years? So, Paul, I'll start with that. Will U.S. producers, U.S. produce farmers exist 10 years from now as producers and farmers in the United States?
I think so, but my mantra the last year and a half has been it's time for farmers maybe to form groups and to stand up. Because Shay, we all know that you've had great price increases, and you're not the anomaly. It's across the whole industry. So with these rising costs and retail constantly bringing down the contract prices, right, it's time for farmers actually to stand together through an association maybe to actually get those prices in the realm of reality where we can be in business next year. To me, sustainable agriculture means the farmers in business next year. That's sustainable to me. So this has been my mantra like over the last 2 years. In fact, I just got back from Nogales and I told them the same thing. When big retail wants to beat you down, you got to get rid of that one guy that goes around everybody and takes the contract for the cheap money, right? Because he is always the problem, and you really have to stand strong because your livelihood depends on it. You being in business going into the future now depends on it. We're not talking about pie in the sky now. We're talking about real hard facts.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right about that. But I actually worry, you'll think I'm crazy here maybe, but I actually worry less about that guy that's going around and lowballing everybody anymore, because my point of view has been, and you're right in what you're saying, everything you're saying is correct. The growers, as farmers, we're too stinking independent. We want to do everything our own way. We don't want to work together. I'm going to beat you by making you go bankrupt first. And that's how I'm going to end up with the market share. And I guess I'm kind of proving my own point here, because I'm like that guy that goes around today and he goes to that retailer and uses last year's price. So if he uses a 2021 price in 2022, he's going to be so far off the mark that he's going to be out of business in 1 year. That's what's different, because we've been losing 2 or 3%. Like maybe the retailers in general have allowed us to make single digit margins. Okay. I mean, you could argue that it's 9%. You can argue that it's 1 or 2%, but it's definitely been single digit margins. But with this double digit inflation, we're not going to lose just 1 or 2%. We're going to lose 15 or 20 or 25% if we match 21 pricing in 2022. So I think those guys are out of business. And maybe I'm completely wrong, but like we have to react so much faster now because of the inflation, or what looks to be like massive inflation in 2022.
I totally agree. I spoke to some growers when I was in Arizona, and some of them did get a 15 or 20% increase, let's say on the hard squashes and something. But I won't mention the chain. On the summer squashes, wanted the same contract as last year. It's got to be, you know, squash used to be, I'm going to use just round numbers. Let's say $4, $4.50. I guarantee that price, the pick and pack now is probably $6, $6.50. So now if you're doing that contract based on a $4.50 or $5, you're underwater. And if you think the spot market is going to take up the average, that's a very, very bad play. You know,
you think the spot market's going to stay soft, and why? Why do you think the spot market's going to stay stop?
Okay. Last year was probably the best year I ever had in the produce business. I've been doing it a long time. This year is the worst year I had in the produce business. Why? Last year, we all had that big retail push. Mm-hmm. It didn't make a difference that food service was out of the picture. Retail was up 30%. Food service on its best day could never be 30%. So we all rode that out. This year, retail, less consumption, retail down. Food service back a little bit, but nowhere near 30%.
Right. Not even close.
Not even close.
Where has that demand gone? Because we're sitting over here as onion shippers. We're looking at, we're down 40% this year across the entire Northwest. So, and we grow about 60, 70% of the total consumption during our window. As onion growers, we have the same question. We're over here and we're 30 to 40% down on our volume, but we're not seeing that reflected in the pricing, and the demand isn't there. A year ago, daily shipments of onions were somewhere in the almost 500 loads per day. And now we're down in the high 300s, low 400s. Like, we've lost 100 loads worth of volume. And where did it go? I mean, we can't be eating less, or somehow we are, but like, there was no food service last year. It was only retail. And now there's a little bit of food service, but there's, you know, the retail's not picking up the slack. Where did it go? What's going on?
Retail has a very, very, very poor business model. They actually, sales are up in produce over last year, but it's based on numbers. It's based on margin, not consumption. In fact, consumption is down. That, to me, is the biggest. This is what we need our trade associations to do. This is not consumption, increased consumption. The increase in consumption will raise all of us to new levels. We'll raise your prices. We'll get you back to 500 loads. We'll take a $6 FOB to a $10 or a $12 FOB. You know, we'll make people healthier. It's a win-win-win for everyone. And I'll tell you the truth, lower margins, unfortunately, there's not real produce people running, you know, big retail. Lower margins will mean more volume, and I guarantee the bottom line will be better. But they just don't see it. They just don't see it that way.
Right. And you got to convince them of that. And then, you know, what are the other things too? So you talked about the trade associations, which you and I have been very vocal about our frustration with the associations that are supposed to represent the produce industry as a whole. You know, I mean, the lack of progressive marketing, the lack of consumer facing programs to increase consumption, all of those things are, you know, absolutely frustrating. But at the same time, I'm not sure exactly what we do, but I can say this for sure. If we increase consumption, we would also have a healthier country, right? If we made produce cheaper, and if that was part of the government, like the government's policy, like at the bottom of the pyramid is what we sell, but it's way cheaper to go buy that bag of Cheetos when you go to the grocery store than it is to buy, you know, a bag of grapes or something like that. And rightfully so, it should be more, but how much healthier would we be as a nation if we could promote healthy eating by making it more accessible, cheaper, or there were programs, part of your government assistance was only, would only work for fresh produce or something like that. I don't know what the answer is. And I'm not the kind of guy that wants to control people at all. I hate the idea of how the government's trying to dictate things to us today. But it's a bigger picture than that, because I don't know how farmers, our operation is in existence with the pressure that we have from every different angle. I don't know how we're in business in 10 years if we don't start getting the support of the American consumer, the American retailer, and the American government.
You know, you brought out a very, very good point. They'll subsidize high fructose corn syrup, right, to make it so cheap. And to your point, if we have a healthier country, guess what? Medical costs goes down, diabetes goes down. I mean, again, we spoke about this many times. We have the best story of any industry, and nobody tells it, right?
Nobody tells it. Why doesn't the story? I mean, why is it you and I, just two dudes that are talking about our industry and the love that we have for it and the belief that we have in our product, and the organizations that could be out there with, you know, the support of millions of dollars from those of us as members. If I guess I look at it this way, if there was a performance, if there was a level of delivery from these other organizations that are promoting those of us that market produce and those of us that are farmers of produce, if they would execute and we could see that and we could see the ramifications, the results, it would be easy to give them more money. But instead, we're forced to give them money. And they have enough money and they don't have to perform. They just do what they do year in and year out. The status quo.
You use the dairy industry. People don't like dairy, but their organization raised consumption, right? Organization, people love produce, right? But they don't, you know, they push, you know, there's so many great ideas. I have an idea for them just to, off the bat. You know, the last day when they have the chainsaw wires walking around where really nobody really wants to walk anyway. Why don't you just open that to the public and let the public eat all those grapes and you know, take them home. Let it, right. you want to charge them $5. You know what I mean? And fill that place up with 20,000 consumers. That's how bring your kids, let a kid get excited for produce and you got a customer for the next 50 years. I mean, it's so elementary to me that they don't do it. You know what I mean? It boggles my mind that, you know, smart people are not thinking about this. And if they're not doing it, why isn't Walmart doing it? Why isn't Kroger doing it? Why aren't these big organizations doing it? Because produce saved all of their stores. I mean, that's why they have high produce prices, because it takes all the evil away from the rest of the store.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I look at it too, and I feel like if you were to lay out a business plan, that it's relatively straightforward. You know, like what we grow, what we do, what we deliver to the consumer is nothing but good for you. I mean, what else out there is that way? I mean, there's nothing else. There's nothing. No, nothing. You've got cigarettes and alcohol. You've got candy bars and clothing from some Sri Lankan factory where they make 12 cents an hour, and you know, we're delivering something that is equitable across the board, that's highly monitored, that's extremely safe, and yet we're on par with everyone else.
And we have the lowest food cost out of all the industrialized nations. If you go to Europe or something, like, people pay 30-35% of their income to eat. You know, I think we're in the 6-12% category.
Right. So going back to the 10 years, what do you see? Because I'm looking at, and this is a sincere question, I look 10 years into the future and I look at transportation, right? So for those of you that aren't in the produce industry, transportation has increased, well, it's probably doubled in the last 3 years. Double. And just over the course of the last year, it's up in, 45%. Is that probably fair? 45-50%. So for us to deliver our produce now to where most of the consumption is, which is on the eastern seaboard of the United States, we have to get our products there. And all of a sudden, we're at this huge disadvantage over imported products. And it actually means that we're more expensive in some ways than these imported products. And I don't know in that, like usually I get to a position like this, Paul, and I know how to pivot. I've got this idea. I'm like, okay, I can do this. I can pivot this way. I can be more public and people can see me when nobody's doing anything in produce on the internet, for example, right? Nobody was doing anything. Like you were doing your alpha and omega facts and your emails and your stuff long before anyone else. And you had no competition, right? I would assume there was very, very little competition in our, except for the last 18, 24 months, there was very little competition in this segment of marketing and promotions on the internet, on podcasts, on LinkedIn and Instagram and TikTok and all those places. Nobody was there. So you could really, really stand out. So that helped get the market share, but that doesn't keep you in business. What do you see happening? I know you don't know my industry that well necessarily, but you know produce. What are the leafy green guys that are growing in Salinas and Yuma? What do they do? Because that's a little bit more common, a little bit more similar to your pepper production. How do those guys keep themselves in business when freight's doing what it is 5 and 10 years now? How do they go to the government and lobby the government? How do they go to retailers? What do you see our industry doing to make it so that the US consumer has US produce to consume in 10 years?
Well, that's where I think, Jay, I think technology comes in. I think the lettuce is going to be grown on the roof of a distribution center. You know,
okay.
Look at all the vertical farming, mm-hmm. right? We have greenhouses on top of buildings now in New York City. I really believe, Shay, I've been through so many changes in the last 40 plus years where all these things were going to put people out of business. But you know what happened? People learn to change with the times. And if they don't change, they get put by the wayside. But if they do change, I'm sure Salinas guys, maybe you'll be, growing a butter lettuce on a rooftop in Brooklyn someday. Maybe that's the future,
That's interesting, because I wondered if you'd feel like that's the future. Because on leafy greens, it's the future. There's no weight, right? You ship that truck across the country, your cost per pound is extremely high. I look at root vegetables, carrots, onions, potatoes, at least we can gross out the truck. But maybe that's me just trying to justify my existence and the fact that, or not the fact, my concern, it scares me to try and go to New York City and grow onions, right? Like my core competency is right here on our farm, on this land, at this geographic location. And you tell me I got to go grow onions, you know, in on a 20 acre parcel outside of New York. And I'm like, I don't know how to do that.
No, I don't think the whole industry is going to go that way. I just think there's going to be parts of the industry to alleviate the trucking situation.
Uh-huh.
Right. That might be, you know, people listen, I brought this out. Will shippers are subsidizing growers. Shippers and growers are subsidizing the freight market right now. There is no doubt about it. The delivered costs are the same as they were last year. Just that the FOBs are less. Right. So
right.
As the next move for your company to be, you know what, let me get 10 trucks because that truck maybe only cost me $6,000. I'm paying $12,000. Maybe
if I could get a driver for the truck, I would do that tomorrow.
Exactly. That's another thing. Why don't you know all these people that they want to let in the country? There's plenty of great drivers in Latin America. You know what? Give them visas. You know, we could fill up the, because not for nothing. We know Americans don't want to do it. You know, kids don't want to do it. So if that's the case, you know, give them a visa and say, you know, let's fill up these trucks because we have the trucks. We don't have the drivers. You're absolutely right. But I just think, Shay, I never give up on the produce industry. I never give up about our industry's resilience to change with the times.
Right.
There is going to be a consolidation. There is going to be, you know, I think the big get bigger and maybe prices go up to a point where, you know, 15 or 20% of our income is now food. Maybe people listen to guys like us and they get the consumption up. I really believe the consumption is the key to everything because the consumption cures everybody. It takes care of the trucks. And, you know, listen, everybody loves, you know, for the people that don't know, a $9 to $12 FOB in any, pretty much any produce item. Well, that was last year. Maybe it's got to be up 12 to 14, 15.
Now it's got to be 13 to 15. Yeah.
Right. That is in a great wheelhouse from farmer to consumer. That's when stuff is not too high. There's usually profits for everyone from the grower to the wholesaler to the retailer. The consumer gets decent value. That usually works. Maybe we get to that point. Again, the consumption is the key to get to that point.
Okay, so I like all of that. So the one thing we didn't get to is the controversial part, which I've heard you talk about these. I mean, we got about 5 minutes left, and I should have gotten here before, but. You talked about you're frustrated with the, it's called the tomato, what's the agreement?
Tomato suspension.
The tomato suspension agreement, which basically restricts the crossing of tomatoes from Mexico into the United States. Is that a good way to summarize that?
And it sets a floor that a price that you cannot go under.
Okay. So as I guess I look at it. So first of all, in the tomato industry, are the standards on both sides of the border, are they truly the same? Not, and I don't mean hourly pay, and I'll get to that because definitely the pay is like dramatically different, right? We're talking 50 cents to $1.50 an hour in Mexico versus, this is Florida, so I'm not sure what they're paying. If you were in Idaho and Oregon, you'd be 14 and a half, 15 bucks an hour, right? So you got a buck and a half, 10 times more. Okay, let's just put it that way. It's 10 times more expensive if you were growing in this part of the world versus in Mexico. So you have that as an obvious distinction and disadvantage. The living conditions of those people, totally dramatically different as well. But the thing that I can't argue with that is too much. I mean, I would hope that the consumer would care, but this shirt's probably from Sri Lanka, China, Indonesia, somewhere where, frankly, the people are making 45 cents an hour or something too, right? So I'm guilty, just like most people are guilty, right, of not really taking into account the ramifications of the decisions that they make. And that includes our produce as far as labor and housing conditions are concerned. But the next thing is FSMA, like Food Safety Modernization Act, these audits. Do you honestly, can you, and I ask this from with wanting to know the answer, I have my perspective. Let me put it this way as to what I think it is, but I don't even know if that's true. It might just be an assumption. Is the food in Mexico equally as safe and equally as audited and checked on from a safety standpoint as what's grown in the United States?
Well, we all, they're subject to the same, you know, safe food safety and audits. They're, you know, I'll get audits every year, this time of year, from everybody I do with business with in Mexico.
And so, you feel that, and an audit done in the United States is equally as onerous as an audit that's performed in Mexico?
I really can't answer. I never speak of stuff that I don't.
Right. Okay. That's fair. That's fair. Cause that's where my doubt comes in. Right. I can't speak to it firsthand, but I'm like, I know that if you get pulled over in Mexico and you don't want to pay a ticket, you can slip them some pesos and you can drive away. Right. So I wonder, you know, how the audit system works within the country. And if it's equally
the only thing I can say, the only thing I can say is, like, was Primus want to wreck their reputation? So it's Primus in Mexico and it's Primus in the United States, right? Will they want to wreck their, you know, reputation? I would say, you know, listen, I've been around long enough to know that, you know, there's, you know, graft everywhere. So, you know, I can tell you on another thing, a lot of times on these ranches, when I was young in this business, I did business with everybody. Right now, because of all the food safety and everything else, I really deal with very big, large companies, you know, thousands of hectares, substantial financial worth. So I trust in their product.
Right. They're risking a lot, right? They're risking a lot if there's a recall or something.
And with those companies, you'd be surprised. Many of them have housing, you know, they have housing for the people, the farm workers, they have schools, they have daycare, they have health, they have a lot. I'm not saying everyone, but a lot of these, you know, companies do. I mean, in fact, it's a necessity to get the people to work for them, to have these things.
So, okay. So that's good for me to know. I mean, good to hear, right? I think I have my skepticism about certain things about the process, but I guess at the end of the day, I'm like, I don't know how anymore. When I run the numbers, it's about 40 times more expensive in today's dollars for an onion. I'm not talking all produce, but roughly 40 times more expensive for us to produce an onion in the United States versus Mexico. Now, Mexico has much higher power rates. Their electricity is very expensive. Some of their input costs are higher than ours because their distribution is a little bit more challenging. But at the end of the day, we're 25 to 40% more costly to produce here in the United States. And some of that has, I mean, you got the food safety standards, which I think, you know, whether it's actually more like, I'm not saying that the standards are different necessarily, but the way that the audits are done and what it costs us to perform those audits and maintain the processes and procedures in place is just naturally more expensive because our labor is more expensive.
I want to tell you a tomato story. 20 years ago, Florida Roma tomatoes were the thing to buy. There were Mexicans, but everyone wanted Florida Roma tomatoes. So the Mexican Roma tomato market was 7 and the Prima Romas was 12. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Then Mexico, like they've done many, many times, they keep on improving and improving and putting money in and improving, improving. They got it to a point that over the last 10 years, nobody wanted those Florida Romas anymore on quality. They wanted Mexican Romas. So my problem, we talked about the suspension agreement.
Right.
The Florida guys are calling foul now because they didn't keep up with the standards. They were resting on their laurels.
Because they had the market share.
And now that somebody's doing it better, they want to cry foul.
Yeah.
That's my problem.
Okay. Okay, that's fair. I mean, because I look at it and I'm sure people take that perspective on me when I'm whining about Mexico. I'm sure they're like, and I've been called out on it. Like, hey, you're just complaining because you're losing market share. I guess I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do because I'm doing everything I can to meet these standards. We've had a 60% increase in our cost of labor just in the last 5 years. Our food safety, we spend $250,000 a year on food safety. Now we have 16 different audits per year. You look at the low emission tractors. We have tier 4 tractors that we have to run, which they don't other places. Like, I just don't, and I'm fine with all of that. I'm actually okay. Like, raise the standard, raise the bar. But then when the consumer goes to the store and they're like, well, crap, that Mexican onion is 69, or the retailer is buying, because that's really who's going to make the decision. The retailer says, well, I can buy a Mexican onion for $9 FOB, or better, $11 delivered. And these US guys want 15. Well, how do I can't compete with that. If the quality is comparable, which is going to be, I don't pay the wages, and I don't have the older equipment with the higher emissions. I don't know how to compete anymore to be in business. And that's why I keep talking about this 10-year window that we have. I don't see, and again, I'm very onion centric, onions, watermelons, asparagus. I mean, the crops that I do grow, I don't know how to be here. I mean, our asparagus is already gone. It is gone. So how am I here in 10 years? And how do I get the mentality of the consumer? Number one, which the organizations could do. They could help sell US grown produce in a way that they don't. Yeah, buy American. But as much as we could fight for buy American, I think it takes US policy as well, because do we want to have producers in the United States? And I don't know if you'd agree with that or not, but to me, from a national security standpoint, we want to be at least self-sufficient. I'm not saying we don't bring stuff in from other countries, but we really need to consider, are we okay having all of our tomatoes, peppers, cukes, all coming from these other countries? And can we live without them? Yeah, we can. But you start doing that with your core items, you know, like I'm talking onions, potatoes, and all of a sudden those are coming from overseas. Can we really survive 18 months while we get that back into production, if we could even get it back into production in 18 months? So I feel like it's multifaceted, and we need help from all these different areas. I just don't know where to start. And I don't know if you even agree.
Oh, no. I'm just so everybody knows, I bleed red, white, and blue. I'm a big believer. And there's somewhere in the middle, because I believe about food safe. We gave up our drugs, and now we found out what, you know, how bad that is. We can't give away all our food. We have, and I don't really know the answer. I didn't realize, like, you know, I'm not too well versed in onions. I told you that all the time. I got most of my education from Shea Myers in the last year and a half when it comes to onions. But are they, like, I know Mexico big on white onions. Are they just as big in like Spanish onions and red onions? Is it the white onion crop that is most detrimental to you?
Actually, the new detrimental problem is actually Peru. Peru has increased their production by over 80% in the last 5 years. So they're actually growing as many onions to Peru and delivering them to the East Coast as what we grow in the first to second largest growing district in the country. And it's because they can do it cheaper. I mean, especially when you start considering freight, ocean freight to the Eastern, you know, to Savannah, Miami, you know, Jersey, New York. I mean, we can't touch the freight. They can just kill us on the freight. In addition to all of the different standards that we're talking about when it comes to labor. So it's not just Mexico we're talking about. It really is South America as well. And the Canadians, with the high subsidization that they have, we're losing market share to them as well. And we're getting it from every angle. The Peruvian guys are growing yellow onions.
I can remember back in the day when they would only come to market when we had like a $30 Spanish onion market. They caught that gap in the middle there. But I didn't realize it was such a big problem. Shay, I don't have all the answers. I'm sorry, I don't have the onion edge, but somewhere in the middle of policy, education, consumption, those are, you know, again, if we raise consumption 20%, you probably wouldn't care. You probably wouldn't care about Peruvian onions, because the market, you know what I mean? Again, why I think consumption is such a big part of this equation, and nobody is diving into it the way it should be, because it, you know, rising tide raises all boats, right? So,
right.
You know, we get consumption up 20%. That's going to take care of Florida. That's going to take care of Idaho. That's going to take care of Washington. That's going to take care of, that might cause people to start growing again because of that consumption. Because people, I think, especially the younger people, they're into this locally grown, you know, less carbon footprint. They're really into that. So we have, you know, that's a good thing for our future, because they will be the biggest part of our makeup in a very, very short time.
Absolutely.
So at least you have that going, you know, you got that going for you for the next 5 to 10 years. They become the powerhouse. You know, I'm a baby boomer, but, you know, millennials and then Gen Zs, I guess, start, you know, feeling their oats. You know, they're already customers. They're already, yeah. already
and they're powerful. Leaders. They're powerful. I mean, they're powerful at causing change. I mean, that's why we're seeing on a corporate level so much pressure to reduce our carbon footprint, to change our practices. And that's why, I mean, when you look at agriculture today, why we feel in the United States, especially so, I mean, threatened is strong, but I think it's fair. I'd call it threatened, you know, like the idea that we're being looked at as a massive contributor to carbon emissions, even though, I mean, we feed everyone still. And we're not, I for some reason, and part of it is farmers and people in agriculture, we do a terrible job. And we're talking about it right now. We do a terrible job about communicating the good things that we do and responding to the criticism. So we're such a freaking easy target. Everyone's like, well, these farmers are wasting all this water and they douse their fields in chemical and they have a massive carbon footprint. They have all of these things. And we just say, yeah, uh-huh. Whatever, you know, like we don't have a counter argument. We have to make a counter argument and prove our position.
And if we do have a counter.
We have a legitimate argument in yes. against what they're saying, but we have to raise our voices. And if we don't, we're going to continue to be demonized and looked down upon and worried about when, you know, much of the time we're actually doing the right thing for the right reasons. And, you know, we just have to speak up. So thank you. Cause I, you know, you've been out here, talking about our industry longer than I've been alive, probably at least as long as I've been alive. And I've always seen your passion and the desire that you have to improve the industry. And you're a straight shooter. That's what I wanted to come on here with you for, is because I knew that you would tell me what your perspective was. And we, you know, we can agree to disagree or we can agree, but we both know that the industry consumption is the answer. Some involvement, hopefully from the government, is an answer. And more support from industry organizations is also, you know, a key component to this whole thing, that the organizations can't continue to be existent, but not proactive in helping us to increase consumption and to protect our industry.
Shay, you brought it up right in the beginning. When we were doing this box program, you heard me talk about many times, it was just a waste of resources and money. You just gave everyone a card. They could have had some self-esteem by going shopping, and it could have just been a card used for fresh, you know, produce, meat, fish, dairy. Use that card. And yes, it should be a part. It should be part of government assistance. You want a system, maybe to take 20, 25% of it. Again, we just went from 6% now to 25%, right? All the people get government assistance. 25% of it's got to be, you know, used for fresh food, not for Cheetos, not for macaroni and cheese, for fresh food. Right off the bat, they're giving the money away. They could help an industry, and they could help the people in the country as well, because if they eat healthy, they're going to get, you know, they're going to be healthy.
Exactly. And I mean, and what you mentioned that, like, what are all the other things that improve? And it makes me think of one thing, like when I think of wheat and corn, soy, beans, you know, a lot of those commodities that are turned into something else, turned into bread, turned into noodles, turned into Cheetos. The farmer only gets one or two pennies out of every one of the dollars, right? They get almost nothing back of that. When you look at produce, I'm willing to wager that it's double digits. It's not high double digits, but at least it's 10 or 11 or 12% that goes back to the farmer. So right. It matters to the farmer as well. If we just grew wheat and corn all day, we wouldn't even be in business in this area with what our costs are and the environment in which we operate. That's why we grow vegetables. But, you know, to have the support the same way that these other commodities are supported would change the way that we exist. And it let us do some significant improvements environmentally, from a sustainability standpoint, from a worker condition and pay standpoint, all of these things that people so desperately want us to do and that we're doing our very best to comply with and complete, we would be able to do that much better. We could reduce our carbon footprint that much more if we had the support of the American consumer, of the American government.
Yeah, it's pretty simple to do. And it's amazing that—
Well, and it seems simple, but I'll tell you, after I went to Washington last time, I decided nothing's simple in Washington. Paul, thank you so much for being here. Is there anything you'd like to, you know, I mean, those that are listening, those that'll see this, is there anything you want to tell?
No, you, anyone that wants to follow me, I do a couple of video. It's not as sophisticated as Shay's, believe me. I talk on my phone, but it's not edited. It's not,
great stuff.
It's not edited, but it's follow me on LinkedIn. That's where I put all the links that are, a lot of the stuff I'm speaking about. And I usually start on Instagram. So just follow me there. And the last thing is New York Produce Show is coming up, and I'm doing a tour of the Hunts Point Market, someplace I spent 45 years of my life. So it's going to be a fun tour on December 14th. And S. Katzman is supplying breakfast for everyone that attends, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I might have a few characters join us, and it should be a lot of fun. I have a story at every step, so... Join cool. us if you're in New York.
Very cool. Perfect. Thanks, Paul. I really appreciate it. Thanks for your time. Thanks for carving out a few minutes here for today.
Thank you, buddy.
Hey guys, hoped you liked this one. I sure did. I've been watching and listening to and learning from Paul for a very long time. I realize this is very produce-centric, but I hopefully there was still something for you to get from this. Please rate, review, subscribe, help my algorithm along so I can get a little bit more reach. I hope you appreciate what you learned here. I certainly appreciate the audience and the ability and opportunity to share this with you. We'll see you.